Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, over the weekend, the United States suddenly announced that a terrorist group, as they called it, had launched an attack on a U.S. base in Jordan and killed three Americans and wounded many more. Well, now that's interesting. Of course, and they blamed Iran, of course. So why these militias in Syria and in Iraq are part of the resistance to the illegal occupation of Syria and Iraq by U.S. troops? There's not that many U.S. troops there. There's like a few thousand in each country. We don't really know how many because, you know, we're just citizens of the United States and paying for all this, but it's none of our business how many troops are occupying Iraq and Syria. So these militia groups have been attacking U.S. bases off and on for months, even years, but they have started attacking them more since Israel started attacking Gaza. Because they're, you know, that's just part of it. It's part of the, like I said, the resistance to U.S. occupation in the Middle East. But the United States has never, up until now, admitted that any Americans were killed. That seems hard to believe with all these attacks, because there have been attacks with some regularity on these bases. But the United States always either ignores them, pretends like they didn't happen, or says they happened, but nobody was hurt, except for sometimes they say some people got concussions. But this time, all of a sudden, they announced that three soldiers had been killed. Why would they do that? Well, the weeks before this attack, there was reports in U.S. media that the U.S. was thinking about withdrawing their troops from Iraq and Syria because they're out there in the middle of hostile territory. The only reason they aren't attacked more is because everyone's afraid of crazy nuke country. What do you do if you kill one of these sitting ducks out there? What's crazy nuke country going to do? Maybe they won't do anything. Maybe they'll blow up your entire country with a nuclear bomb. You never know. You never know. The entire ruling establishment of America seems to be insane, not just to us Americans, but to other people. But there are sane people there, because that's why they were talking about withdrawing from Iraq and Syria. Oh, and by the way, Iraq, the Iraqi parliament on January 5th, had passed a resolution that the United States should get its troops out of Iraq. They are not welcome there. Get out. And the United States went, no. So I think what happened was this was an answer to the talk about removing the troops from Iraq and Syria. This was the deep state announcing deaths of three Americans so that they can say, no, we're not leaving Iraq and Syria. And that's what they've been doing. Remember that the United States has been occupying 30% of Syria since 2014. And they're stealing their oil and they're stealing their wheat. So the people in Syria are going hungry and they're going without fuel. And right now it's really, really cold in Syria and they only have electricity 1 hour a day because the United States is stealing their fuel. Now you would think, wouldn't you, that all these people demonstrating all over the world about illegal occupations would throw in Syria while they're at it, right? Why don't they throw in U.S. out of Syria? But no, mum's the word. Nobody mentions it. Nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Even when they had their earthquake, yeah, not only is the United States occupying their land and stealing their oil and stealing their wheat, but they have a blockade on Syria. And even when they had their earthquake, they refused to lift the blockade on Syria. The only relief that went to Syrians were to the terrorists in the Idlib province that the United States and Turkey support. So that is the only place that aid went to. That's what kind of people run crazy nuke country. They're just plain old evil, and they don't care about starving cold children. They don't care. They want to steal that oil, and so they're going to steal that oil. So I would just like to point out that when Trump came in to office, he didn't want to be in Syria. So he started talking about withdrawing from Syria. So right in the April 2017, just a couple of months after he got into office and started talking about withdrawing the troops from Syria, we were told that President Assad of Syria launched a gas attack on his own people. Yes, he did. Everybody said so. The media said so. The deep state said so. So then they had Trump backed in a corner. He said he wanted to remove troops from Syria. And then they tell him, oh no, but Assad gassed his own people. So Trump bombed an airfield in revenge and gave up for a little while, but he didn't give up totally. So he kept talking about it. So in April of 2018, the Syrians with Russian backing had almost got the jihadists out of Douma, which is a kind of a suburb kind of close to Damascus, where they'd been holding hostages for 10 years. And they had Russian negotiators in there, and they'd finally agreed to for the terrorists to go to Idlib. That's where they dumped all the terrorists because, you know, then they're in the protection of Turkey and America in return for returning those hostages. Well, you know what? They bust those guys out of there, but guess what? The hostages didn't turn up. They'd already killed them. And guess what they did with some of the dead bodies? They dumped them in a basement in a big old pile in a house in Douma. And then they accused Assad of using chemical weapons on his own people. They even had a little baby thrown on top of the pile, just, you know, like the chair. And then, so what the Americans and the media told us, and even the UN, Richard and I have talked about this Douma gas attack multiple times because the UN OPCW, Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, they came out with a report that said these people had been gassed to death with chlorine gas, right? But what actually happened is two of the investigators, the ones that were actually there on the ground, said, we never said that. They were whistleblowers. They came out and they said, we never said that. There was absolutely no evidence that Assad had gassed his own people. That was a big old lie. And so they got silence. They were not allowed to sign the report, and the OPCW, they issued a report that was a lying report. How about that? The UN line, the United States line, the media line. What a shock. What a shock. But in any case, that time, I think they got Trump to bomb again, and then he did not leave Syria. He did not pull the troops out of Syria. The troops are still in Syria. They're still stealing Syrian oil, and Syrians are still going cold and hungry, and the United States still has a blockade on Syria. And none of this is talked about, none of this is mentioned, except for now when these U.S. soldiers were killed. Now, according to the United States, they were killed in Jordan because they don't want to admit they were illegally in Syria. That's part of the reason no one notices, no one cares, because the United States won't admit it and the media goes along with them. Of course they do. They said it was in Jordan, but the King of Jordan said it wasn't here. And the Iraqi Hezbollah group that claimed responsibility for the attack actually said they bombed four places. They bombed four bases that night, and three of them were in Syria, and one of them was in Iraq, I think they said. So wherever these three soldiers got killed, was it in Jordan? Well, of course it was, because if Joe Biden and all the media says it was in Jordan, then it must be in Jordan, right? I don't know where it was. I don't even know if they were actually killed there. Maybe they were killed in Ukraine and this was just a cover-up. So I would like to point out that in January 3rd, 2020, in Trump's last year in office, the United States bombed a car with General Soleimani, an Iranian general, and the head of an Iraqi militia. They bombed a car at a civilian airport in Iraq, in Baghdad. Now, General Soleimani had come, this was 4 years ago, to broker a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And Iraq was going to be the host of the meeting. Well, the United States didn't like that, so they blew him up. Even though Iran had notified them he was coming. It was a commercial flight. It was not a military flight. It was a commercial flight at a commercial airport. And on the way out, the United States used Predator drones to blow them all up. General Soleimani and the head of the Iraqi militia and forced five other people that just happened to be there because, you know, collateral damage. That's how the United States does. Anyhow, everyone was mad. Iran launched some missiles at a U.S. base in Iraq, but they did warn the United States that they were going to do it, and the base was evacuated, and the United States claimed that nobody got hurt. Okay. And then the Iraqi parliament voted to have the U.S. troops leave. It was kind of funny because at the time there was some sort of general there who apparently didn't know that all this talk about democracy and national sovereignty is pure BS put out for the plebs, and he really believed he was there supporting Iraqi national sovereignty and democracy. So here is an article from foreignpolicy.com, and it's titled, Pentagon Bats Down Reports U.S. is Leaving Iraq, and this is dated January 6, 2020. The U.S. Defense Department scrambled on Monday to knock down reports that the military is withdrawing from Iraq just hours after the Iraqi parliament voted on a non-binding resolution asking the government to eject U.S. forces in retaliation for the assassination of a top Iranian general on Iraqi soil. And I'd like to point out once again, he was there as a diplomat, not a general. He was a general, but he was there as a diplomat, trying to bring peace between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Well, you know, the United States blew them up, but just last year, Iran and Saudi Arabia did sign a peace deal, even though it was brokered by, I think maybe China this time. Maybe the United States didn't want to blow up the Chinese diplomat. That might cause a little bit more trouble than blowing up an Iranian, right? Multiple media outlets, including the Washington Post, reported Monday that the United States was withdrawing forces from Iraq, citing a letter sent from Brigadier General William Seely, the commander of the U.S. Task Force in Iraq, to the Deputy Director of Combined Joint Operations Baghdad. The letter, which was unsigned, stated that, quote, in due deference to the sovereignty of the Republic of Iraq, and as requested by the Iraqi parliament and the prime minister, the U.S. military will be repositioning forces over the course of the coming days and weeks to prepare for onward movement, unquote. Oops! He took all that democracy stuff seriously. So what? How did the Pentagon respond? But following, remember this is 4 years ago, but following the reports, the Pentagon rushed to deny that there would be an imminent U.S. withdrawal. And they weren't lying. Who was lying? The guy who believed in the democracy stuff or the people that are like, no, we ain't leaving? Yeah, those people. And oh, listen to who was involved. Defense Secretary Mark Esper and General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, quickly called a media gaggle, telling reporters they did not know where the letter came from and saying there's been no decision to leave Iraq. There is no decision to leave, nor did we issue any plans to leave or prepare to leave. We are committed to the defeat ISIS mission in Iraq alongside our allies and partners, Esper said. By the way, ISIS was quiet for a while until they started talking about getting the U.S. forces out of the illegal occupations of Iraq and Syria. And all of a sudden, poof, ISIS turned up again. What a coincidence, am I right? The drama unfolded as the Middle East reeled from the killing of Major General Qassem Soleimani, the Quds force commander who was considered the second most powerful Iranian after the supreme leader, a move that has raised fears of an all-out war. The Pentagon has mobilized thousands of additional forces to the region in recent days and halted the fight against the Islamic State to respond to the increased threat that Tehran will retaliate. But Iran doesn't want to get in a war. As a matter of fact, Iran this time has already said, we don't want to get in a war. The Iraqi militia group that took responsibility for attacking the bases has already said, we're going to stand down. We're not going to attack any more bases for a while. And apparently, the Biden administration, which is totally and completely shameless, they asked through Switzerland, they told Iran that if we bomb you, we want to make sure that you're not going to respond in any way. And Iran responded, if you bomb our soil, we will respond. That was kind of an open season on Syria, if you ask me. That's what they were saying. You can bomb Iraq, you can bomb Syria, just don't bomb Iran. So right now, you know, we'll see what they're going to do. I'm sure that Biden will bomb someone. That's just how the U.S. rolls. They don't stop a chance to bomb in any case. But anyhow, so that is what I think this is all about. But of course, as soon as the United States blamed Iran for what the Iraqi militia did in Syria or Jordan, take your pick, then the usual suspects, the warmongering suspects like Lindsey Graham and Nikki Haley started screaming, we got to bomb Iran. Remember Lindsey Graham's BFF, John McCain? Remember him singing Bomb, 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 Bomb Iran back in, well, one of the previous times when the United States was threatening to bomb Iran? I think that might have been in the 2005 version when the Cheney regime was wanting to bomb Iran. And boy, they were all for it there too. They were really for bombing Iran, but that didn't happen then either. So I don't think the United States is going to bomb Iran, but they have to pretend like they're going to bomb someone, because when you live in a death cult society where people get off on killing other people, then they kind of think that they have to. They think that they have to kill someone. It's just, I don't know, it's the death cult that we live under. I think it's kind of bizarre, but there you go. And so I feel like, yeah, they probably are going to bomb someone, but I think it'll probably be Syria. Poor Syria. They're cold. They're hungry. Their country is, a third of it is occupied by foreign hostile thieving, looting troops. And now they're going to get bombed again. I mean, it just doesn't seem fair to me. It just doesn't seem right. But there you go. It seems like the only group in that area of the world that isn't afraid of crazy nuke country is Yemen. So Yemen is still blockading ships, American and UK ships, on top of the Israeli ships. It originally started off blockading. And then when the United States got involved by bombing them, and I think that the United States was doing that thing where, oh, we can't attack Iran. They're too big. They can fight back. We don't really want to get in a war with Russia or China right now directly. We'll just use our proxies. Why don't we just bomb Yemen? They're small. They can't fight back. So that's what they did. It's kind of, it reminds me of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had U.S. troops in Lebanon, and some group in Lebanon blew up their barracks, and it killed like over 200 Marines. So Reagan just withdrew from Lebanon, which was actually the sensible thing to do. But like I said, we live in a death cult in America, so everyone's like, you're a coward, you cut and ran, you should have like killed and be killed some more, because that's what we like. Anyhow, so to make up for him pulling the troops out of Lebanon, he attacked Grenada. Because Grenada was this tiny little island country with, I don't know how many people lived there, not even a million, I don't think. And they just went in there and bombed and invaded and killed a bunch of people, blew up a mental hospital, which, you know, that mental hospital was probably running experiments that the United States didn't want to get out. But I don't know, that's just conjecture I have seen. But in any case, that made up for it. Americans forgot all about Lebanon and started cheering and waving their flags and going, we beat Grenada. We're number one. We're number one. And it was pretty pathetic and disgusting, but that's what they did. And I think maybe that's what Biden thought he was going to do. Well, we don't want to take on anyone that can fight back, so we'll take on Yemen. So they bombed Yemen a couple times, and Yemen's like, oh yeah, we just added you to our list. They were only stopping ships that were either Israeli or that were going to or from Israel. But as soon as the United States and UK, of course, the mini-me of the United States, as soon as they started bombing Yemen, well, then Yemen said, all right, you're on our list now. So the United States is, oh yeah? Well, we're the world's biggest navy. We're going to escort this ship, these two ships, I think it was, through the Bab al-Mandab Strait that Yemen controls, and you can't do anything about it because we're the United States. So Yemen, they're the only ones, like I said, that aren't afraid. Even this Iraqi Hezbollah militia is backing down. They're like, oh, we don't want a bunch of people to die. So, you know, crazy nuke country, we're going to back down. We're going to announce that we aren't going to do any attacks on their bases for a while. Anyhow, Yemen's like, bring it on. And they launch missiles at the United States naval warship and the ships it was escorting. So the ships that they were escorting turned around and went, we're out of here, man. And so the Navy went too. So now the Yemeni military is busily, you know, attacking U.S. ships, military ships. They don't have the ability. They don't have those big anti-ship missiles that the big countries have, like, you know, Iran. But they have the little missiles, so they're lobbing them off, and, you know, the ships are catching fire on the deck of the ship. So, yeah, they're catching the deck of the ship on fire, and it's all quite exciting and very colorful. And so the United States, which for the last, how many years it's been, ever since Obama's pivot to Asia, or pivot to China, which I believe started in, as soon as he came in, so 2009, they started getting ready for war with China, and one of the ways they were getting ready for war with China was by harassing China's ships in the South China Sea. And the reason that the United States gave for hassling Chinese ships in the South China Sea is they were upholding the freedom of navigation of the Law of the Sea Treaty that the United States, by the way, never signed. And so they were hassling Chinese ships in Chinese waters to make sure that the Chinese would not shut down passage of their own ships in their own waters when China relies on those ships to export to the rest of the world. Now, does that make sense? No, of course it doesn't make sense. It's the stupidest reason, well, of many stupid reasons you have been handed in your life. That is one of the stupidest reasons ever, that the United States needs to go over and hassle Chinese navigation, which they depend on to make their money, in order to make sure they don't shut it down, their own sea, their own ships. That's what you're told. But the funny thing is, now that Yemen is attacking Israeli, American, and British ships in the Red Sea, the United States had the nerve, the gall, to go to China and say, China, will you please ensure freedom of navigation for us in the Red Sea? So the country that has been threatening China for the last 15 years in their own waters, using the excuse freedom of navigation, now has the nerve to go to China and say, excuse us, China, we're having trouble getting our ships through this passage, this strait here, and we know you have some pull in the Middle East, so could you please fix it so that we have freedom of navigation in the Red Sea? And I'm pretty sure China said, yeah, no. I mean, can you imagine the hilarity that ensued after? I mean, they're too polite to laugh in their faces, but come on now. That has got to be the boldest and shameless demand that the U.S. has ever made. And, you know, like I said, they're shameless. They should be embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for them. Are you kidding me? You hassle these people for 15 years. And then you turn around and go, hey, you know what? We're in a bind. You need to help us out. Why should they? Why should they help you out? It's just amazingly bold and shameless for them to even think of asking China. Again, they should be embarrassed. They should be too embarrassed to do it, but they're not, because they have no shame. Meanwhile, in the Ukraine, the United States is now, it looks like, backing a coup. Maybe they're ready to throw Zelensky to the wolves. The thing is, they've also dropped all pretense that this is a Ukrainian versus Russia war, and the United States is just sitting back, mildly interested, supporting Ukraine by waving yellow and blue flags and giving them billions of dollars and all these weapons and sending trainers over there. But they're not telling Ukraine what to do. No, it's all up to the Ukrainians. Well, now they're saying the Ukrainians aren't doing what we told them to do. And they're openly saying it. And they even sent a lieutenant general to Kiev to directly run the war, because it isn't actually Ukraine versus Russia. It's NATO versus Russia. And by NATO, I mean mostly the U.S. with the enthusiastic backing of the usual suspects, the former Nazi regimes, and the ones that were part of the coalition with the Soviet Union, the United States, and UK, they are now on the side of Germany and the Nazis, which you could have figured out once FDR died and Alan Dulles and his brother took over and the CIA took over and they blew off John F. Kennedy's head when he said he was going to break them up. You could have figured, looking at that, looking at the Vatican rat line that brought all those Nazis over, we're always told they went mostly to Argentina. But oh, look at when Zelensky went to Canada and they dragged out a Waffen SS veteran who was in a unit that fought with the Germans and had killed tens of thousands of Poles, Jews, Russians, Hungarians. Everyone that was in Ukrainian, oh, also Ukrainians who did not go along with the Nazis, because most Ukrainians did not go along with Nazis, they brought him over on the rat line, you know, 70 years ago, and then they dragged him out. He was like 97 or something, and they gave him not one, but two standing ovations. Is that a clue which side your country is on now? Yeah, it should be. So that's where we are now. Victoria Nuland, of Ukrainian descent. Anthony Vinland, the one that got Trump impeached the first time because they said he held up weapons to Ukraine that they were going to use to kill their own people. And this was such an outrage, he had to be impeached. Funny how, when they want to bomb Syria, they say Assad is killing his own people. But when they want to send weapons to Ukraine so that they can bomb their own people, and they say Trump stood in the way, well, then all of a sudden, there's nothing wrong with killing your own people. Then it's just something you do, isn't it? So yeah, hypocrisy much? Yeah. So anyhow, there's a bunch of people that have old scores to settle, and they want to turn Ukraine over to BlackRock. BlackRock is already making deals. George Soros' son has already made a deal with the Kiev regime to use Ukraine as a toxic waste dump for chemical factories in the United States, Germany, and other Western countries. Yeah, they want Ukraine, but they don't want the Ukrainians. So it's pretty much obvious now. They're making it pretty open. They are running this war, and as long as Zelensky and the rest of them did what they were told, then they were fine to stay in the shadows and just give the orders. But once the Ukrainians started to balk, once they started to go, you know what, we have lost hundreds of thousands of people, and we've got Lindsey Graham saying it's the best investment that the U.S. ever made because there's no Americans dying, just Ukrainians. And they keep talking about the last Ukrainian, and we thought that was just a figure of speech. But you know, we're getting to where it looks like they're serious. They do want to fight to the last Ukrainian, because then they get Ukraine without any Ukrainians in it. And then they can all divide it up, and everyone will be happy. Except for, you know, the Ukrainians who used to live there. They're not going to be happy. But Victoria Nuland will be. She went to Kiev yesterday. I assume she's there to give more orders, because that's how she does. Remember, we're coming up to the 10th anniversary of the Maidan coup of 2014, which overthrew Ukraine's democratically elected government and put in governments that have been the puppets of the United States for the last 10 years. And you know who was there handing out cookies on the Maidan? That very same Victoria Nuland, who now has gone to Kiev to give some new orders. So she hasn't stopped. She is still one of the most evil people around. Anyway, yeah, we're coming up on the anniversary of the coup. That is when Ukraine ceased to be a sovereign country. That is when their democracy was destroyed. That is when the United States put in open Nazis into the government. That is when people of Crimea went, oh no, we're out of here. And so did the people of Donbass. And that is when the entire Civil War started. The Civil War, we are now told, only started 2 years ago when Russia invaded. No, it started in 2014 when the U.S. overthrew their elected government. And the United States has been arming them and training the Kiev regime forces ever since. Because what happened was, when Crimea separated from Ukraine, said, yeah, you know, we want nothing to do with Nazis. My grandfather fought against Nazis. Well, there was like something like 2,300 Ukrainian troops there, and 2,000 of them went with Crimea. And the same thing happened in the Donbass. Of the troops that were sent to kill the people of Donbass, a bunch of them, whole battalions, went over to the Donbass side with their tanks and their weapons and their ammo and everything. So the whole Ukrainian army, called Ukrainian army minus Eastern Ukraine, had to be rebuilt by NATO. And they've been doing that years until Russia finally said, hey, that's enough killing. We're going to step in and help the people of Donbass, because they have been putting up with this murder. Because what the Kiev regime NATO forces did was they moved into the Donbass. That's why it's so hard to get them out now. They're embedded there. They have tunnels. They have bunkers. They have underground. Because remember, the Soviet Union thought that the United States was going to attack them. So they built all kinds of fortifications and protection against the United States. And they did air defense systems that it's taken 2 years for the Ukrainians to run out of, because the Soviet Union seriously thought that crazy nuke country would attack them. And crazy nuke country, where we live, do you remember any bomb shelters? I remember the bomb shelter when I was a kid. It was the school cafeteria. Why was it a bomb shelter? It wasn't underground. It was a bomb shelter because it had a triangle that was yellow and black. That made it a bomb shelter. Would it really have protected us against bombs? No. But guess what? The United States knew they weren't going to drop nuclear bombs on us. They told us to get under our desks because someday they would do it, but they knew they weren't going to. And getting under our desk, really? That was their thing. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union's digging underground bunkers for their entire population, which is why it's so hard to get them out of the Donbass, which is not their country. But they're there anyhow. So anyhow, we'll see what happens in Ukraine. We'll see what happens in Syria. I don't think crazy new country is going to go down without a fight. That's my opinion. All right, that's the end of Occupy the Airways. See you next week.